Bill's got a lot on his mind. So let's get right to it. You're listening to Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
And good morning and welcome to Wake Up, your radio home for truth, justice, and democracy. 1 hour every Sunday. Connoisseur Media allows me this hour and my co-host, Melissa Kane, to bring you guests that will provide you not only information you need, but a patriotic, full-throated endorsement of the pillars of American democracy and red meat for the ideals that built this great nation. Needless to say, they're under attack by the occupant of the White House and his administration, and we're going right to Melissa, who's down in D.C., gathering information for our next shows coming up. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. I am your remote host on the road. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine, and I know you want to introduce our special guest today. A country racked by political violence needs the kind of input that you're going to get from our guest this morning.
It's true. We need to be standing up for what's right and for the rule of law and making sure that we are doing the right thing. And we've got someone who does that for us every day in Connecticut's 4th CD as our guest this morning. And so we're going to get right to it. We are honored to have with us Congressman Jim Himes. Congressman, if you're on the line, welcome.
Hey, Melissa. Hello, Bill. Great to be with you this morning.
It's great to have you with us, and I believe we've switched places. I am here in D.C., and I believe you're in Connecticut because, well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Republicans have sort of shut things down for a little while.
I'll do that trade all day long. I stay here, you stay there. What do you think?
That's fair. I get it.
We're in the middle of a showdown, right? So yeah. The House passed a budget, which, of course, does nothing to address the fact that for millions of Americans, the subsidies that they get to buy health insurance through the Affordable Care Act are going to expire in a couple of days. That means that millions of people's health care premiums, set aside what happens if the government shuts down, millions of people's health care premiums are about to go up. They passed a budget which didn't address that. It had bipartisan opposition. But to jam the Senate, as the inside the beltway speak suggests is happening, the speaker sent everybody home until after the 30th, just, you know, basically telling the Senate, take our deal, take it or leave it, which is what the Republicans said to the Democrats in the House and now what they're saying to the Republican-controlled Senate. So we may be spiraling towards a shutdown, which is unfortunate, to say the least.
It is unfortunate. Do you think it's inevitable?
Well, no, I don't know that it's inevitable, but things are complicated. You know, on the Democratic side, there is, you know, almost unanimous demand for a change in the way budgets are done. Now, by the way, not even for Democratic ideals, right? Not like healthcare and climate change and all those stuff that is on the Democratic list. There's just a demand that the president abide by the law with respect to congressional appropriations.
And the Constitution.
The Constitution, right? So basically Trump is saying we don't need the Democrats. The Democrats are saying, you know, why would we participate in a process that the president has continually flouted by refusing to actually spend money appropriated by Congress? So, yeah, it's a mess, Melissa. I'm not going to say it's inevitable, but it's starting to feel more and more that way.
It's disappointing, to say the least. It's sad, and it's part and parcel of this moment that we're living in, which almost feels surreal. I mean, I've been reeling the last week, really the last 8 months, over how things are sort of devolving around you, you know, the consistent and not so subtle chipping away of these institutions and the intensifying of violence and violent rhetoric. And that's really what we wanted to focus on with you this morning. So I'm going to switch tracks here a little bit and ask you, considering this moment that we're in and what's happened over the past week, how does the leadership of our country need to be responding?
And I'm going to let Jim have a couple minutes to think that over, because we've got to go for a couple commercials right now.
Already.
Pay for Jim's voice to go out over the airways.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up every Sunday morning. Thanks to Connoisseur Media. Our guest today as Jim Himes and later in the show, Bob Duff talking about political violence and the dissent and division within our country and in our Congress and what it may mean to you as a listener. Melissa was questioning our great congressman about that, and we'll go right to his response.
Yeah, Bill, I'm really glad you asked. You know, so we were just talking about the budget, right? This is the policy debate that government engages in. By and large, pretty boring. You know, we argue about whether we should have 11 aircraft carriers or 13 or 9. We argue about whether Social Security should go up 3% or down 1%, right? This is stuff we do. It's boring. And yet we're in a political
I thought you were supposed to be encouraging the youth to get involved, but you're right. It can be very mundane.
I'll get there. But my point is that what we argue about, we're an enormously great and lucky country. And we argue about things like whether there should be 13 aircraft carriers or 9. But right now the speech is so overheated, just look at your Twitter feed or your Instagram feed, that you would believe that one party wants to destroy America, that they're communists and Bolsheviks and they're traitors, and the other party is the virtuous party, right? Even though we're arguing over silly little things. Now, here's the thing. That debate is important, and it needs to be done in a civil fashion, which it's not. And here's the answer to your question. We get to argue about all that stuff. We do not get to argue about two fundamental principles that are at the core of why this country is great. Number one, we don't resolve any political problems through violence. And part of the reason that we don't do that, apart from the law of the jungle that would prevail if we did, it's the whole reason we have a democracy. Democracies were designed to solve these problems without sticks and stones and swords and guns. The other thing that is absolutely essential and what is getting lost in, quite frankly, the authoritarianism of the current president is that you get to say whatever you want in this country.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you've got the attorney general out there saying, you know, hate speech is not protected by the First Amendment. Baloney.
Actually, it is.
Let me read you a quote. Let me read you a quote, because you're hearing this from Jim Himes. Let me read you a quote. Hate speech does not exist legally in America. There's ugly speech. There's gross speech. There's evil speech. And all of it is protected by the First Amendment. Care to guess who said that?
Charlie Kirk said that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to get off my soapbox right now, but reiterate the point that violence is never okay, and no one should be excusing it. Nobody should be saying, "Oh, Charlie Kirk deserved it," or "Oh, the leftist who got beat up," or "George Floyd." Nobody should ever tolerate one iota of violence, and we do have to tolerate each and all of our speech. Those are foundational principles of this country, which we are drifting hard away from.
If I could ask you, what do you think of Jeff Hurd, your Republican housemate from Colorado?
So Jeff has tell me what, give me a little context.
Well, I read in the Times this week that Jeff Hurd said something that I thought was right out of Jim Himes' playbook. The right response to reprehensible speech, and for the record, I think most of what Charlie Kirk said was reprehensible. I would have loved to have been able to silence him through debate, certainly not through bullets and violence. That's disgusting and reprehensible. But Jeff said the right response to reprehensible speech isn't silencing. It's more free speech.
Right. Right.
Melissa wanted to ask Jim about the possibility
of
breaks
along that line. Exactly. If we certainly, it seems to be that there might be an opening within the ranks of the right. There seem to be at least a few members, like Bill just mentioned, this gentleman from Colorado, pushing back against censorship and censure, for that matter. And is there an opportunity to try and turn down the heat? Is there an opportunity to foster some kind of public detente with a meaningful number of members of the opposite party who understand, as you said, that we don't resolve things with violence and we don't resolve things through censorship?
Yeah, I think, Melissa, the good news here is that I told you about Pam Bondi saying we're going to investigate people for their hate speech, which is the opposite of an American ideal.
Thought police.
She walked that
Thought
back.
Police.
Let's be fair. She walked that back, and you point out Congressman Hurd's statement. The problem is the guy in the Oval is still going full bore on this stuff. We're going to investigate leftist groups. We're going to do this and that. And Melissa, I tried in a statement I made after Charlie Kirk's killing to make a couple of points. Number one, we're humans. We're all humans. And if you saw Charlie Kirk's murder, you know, and think about his wife being widowed and his children being left fatherless, and you didn't spend, you give me the time, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, just feeling the tragedy of that.
And grieving.
If your first instinct was to go to politics or to evaluate what you thought of Charlie Kirk, man, you got to look in the mirror. Number two,
That's right. If
your instinct was to get enraged and to say, we need to go after liberals, you know, it's an understandable reaction in a passionate thing. And I almost, not entirely, but I'm almost willing to forgive people in the heat of passion for taking the wrong path.
I think
leaders,
we all had to do that, Jim.
Leaders do not get to do that. And so many, I was on the floor when Congresswoman Luna and Congresswoman Mace almost caused a fistfight because they seized that moment to say, without a single fact, without any evidence, they pointed at us and said, you guys did this, right? So sadly, we live in an era where they're not going to get recalled and told that you showed behavior that is the opposite of leadership. And by the way, I'm picking on those two. You know, when that happened, I saw some of the Democrats sort of, you know, waiting over there to get into the fistfight, right? But Americans need to take a deep breath and think about who it is that they're sending to Washington. Are they exhibiting the character of leadership, or are they social media conflict merchants?
You know, we've talked last week about the ADL study, Jim, that talked about what are the sources. And, you know, I don't want it to be a right-wing heavy thing, but ADL looked at about 850. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but we're going to have this on our website.
It's the report, Bill, from 2024 on murder and extremism in the U.S. that I think you're
right,
quoting from.
Right, exactly, Melissa. Thank you. And it talked about a decade of political violence, and there were about 850 murders traced back to political extremism. They found that 74% were right-wing extremists, the perpetrators, 19% were Islamist extremists, and 4% were left-wing extremists. Now, we only have to go back 4 or 5 decades to see that there were left-wing extremists causing tremendous political violence and killing. It's all wrong. It's all bad. But if we're going to solve it now, don't we have to look at some of the causes? I mean, Charlie Kirk, whatever good things you can say about him, also talked about, you know, a number of people have to die to preserve our Second Amendment rights. Well, those happen to be 25 people at Sandy Hook Elementary School. So I think, you know, it's the whole free speech thing has been a firestorm around this guy's killing.
You know, Bill, I hesitate to get into the facts because I just feel so strongly that in the in the aftermath of a brutal killing, we shouldn't be trying to look at the scoreboard. But I got an email from a member of the Greenwich Board of Estimate and Taxation the day I put out my statement saying, you need to own this. It's all left-wing violence. And he listed, you know, a bunch of examples, the shooting of the baseball team, Steve Scalise, Charlie Kirk.
Right.
And I wrote him back and I said, look, the whole point here I'm trying to say
it
is
all
we
sucks.
Shouldn't be finger-pointing. It all sucks.
Yeah.
And by the way, let me... You quoted something because the President of the United States and J.D. Vance, they're all saying this is a left-wing thing. I do have a fact. You listed one by the ADL. The Cato Institute, hard right-leaning organization, looked at political violence and found that of fatalities in the last 5 years or so, 50% were committed by right-wing extremists, 22% were committed by Islamic extremists, and about 20% were committed by left-wing extremists. Now, I'm taking no joy in that, and I'm not going to ask for the win. I'm just going to point out that if you believe that this is a left-wing phenomenon, you're living in an alternate universe. So take a deep breath and stop thinking about putting points on the board.
And let's take it up even further than that. Let's look at this from, you know, 40,000 feet above and say this, all of this is political violence. And for the most part, all of this is gun violence. That is one of the reasons a lot of this is happening. And I kind of want to talk about the intersection of where political violence and gun violence meet, as both of you would assume I would. But I have this fantasy, Congressman, where you or other members introduce the Charlie Kirk Memorial Assault Weapons Ban, and for goodness sakes, it sticks because, you know, hypocrisy. Am I delusional here? Do you think some good could come of this?
Well, Melissa, thank you for your leadership in that regard. You've really devoted yourself to reducing the amount of gun violence. And you know, Connecticut has done such a good job, and we have so much yet to do nationally to get guns out of the hands of disturbed people, consistent with American Second Amendment rights. So we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And when the moment is right, now remember, the assassin of Charlie Kirk did not use an assault rifle. He used an old bolt-action hunting rifle, right? So we want to approach this intelligently. But yes, look, in a society where you can get a gun a hell of a lot more easily than you can buy a car, there's going to be a cost to be paid. And yes, we should be doing a little bit more work to make sure that people who are exercising their Second Amendment rights aren't going to go out and shoot somebody for whatever reason. By the way, the other thing I'd put on the list, Melissa, and we don't begin to have the time to explore fully all of these subjects, but do you notice something, which is that almost without exception, Sandy Hook, the Orlando shootings, Charlie Kirk, the guy at the baseball game, all of them are men, and most of them are young men. Like, I think we need to grapple with that, you know? Senator Chris Murphy has done a lot of interesting thinking about this, but these are young men, right? And yes, guns, but also, yes, what the hell is happening with young men in this country?
Yeah, it's something that we've talked about, Melissa and I, on the show before, Jim. And the reason I bring up ADL, and you're right to bring up Cato, which has very similar statistics, is not that we're trying to keep score, really not at all. We just want to solve the problem. And if we turn our head and let the president distract us once again and lie overtly about what's really going on, we can't solve the problems. You talked about how Congress is boring. You have to assemble studies. You have to listen to experts, most of which he and Kennedy have fired. You have to have data, right? You have to have the ability to deal with facts. There aren't alternative facts. As much as Kellyanne Conway started his first term by saying there's alternative, there are not alternative facts. There are facts, and science evolves, and they go after Fauci because it's, 6 feet, 20 feet, no mask, yes mask. The knowledge was evolving. That's how science is. We hold science up and we repudiate it every day in order to make sure what we found out so far is true and how to improve it, make it better. It ties right into the pursuit of happiness in our country. We're always evolving, trying to be a better country that Jim Himes is always bringing us to in Washington. And I've told you this, and I'll say it publicly, I think Jim Himes should be president of the United States because we would never have this kind of...
I second that.
We'd never have this kind of crap in Washington if somebody is smart and is caring. And, you know, he doesn't wear it on his sleeve, but this is an active Christian in his church. I don't particularly have much of a faith. I'm a lapsed Catholic. But Jim is a very, very good person, and he leads us in the right direction. When the president could have said something about Charlie Kirk that was bringing us all together, he talked about the trucks cutting up the Rose Garden to build his stupid mausoleum on the grounds of the Washington without congressional approval. Anyway, we're going to have to cut your segment here, Jim. I'm sorry I talked over you there, but I really have so much admiration for you. Every time Melissa and I have you on the show, I think it's going to be our highest rated shows because you're popular. You're in a great district for people who read, and we don't want to ever lose you, Jim. So thanks for being on the show, and please stay tuned to listen to what Senator Bob Duff has to say about keeping us safer in Connecticut. We're going to the news right now.
An hour of Bill's thoughts on what's going on in Connecticut. Wake up with Bill Finch, only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up. Bill Finch here, your co-host with Melissa Kane, who is on a remote assignment in our nation's hellhole, otherwise known as D.C., Melissa,
it's a gorgeous weekend. It's a gorgeous weekend. It is always so, I don't know, wonderful, and it feels so terrific to me to be here.
I'm hearing Mel Brooks belt out Springtime with Hitler in Germany.
Well, that's where I'm going because I've seen no fewer than 10 clusters of patrolling National Guardsmen and, you know, often, by the way, with machine guns in tow. And, you know, this is in tourist areas. This is in residential areas, right near my daughter's apartment, right down, you know, I could see it from her window.
Keeping those Mexican hordes, those rapists and murderers from attacking our community.
I don't know what they're doing. I don't think they know what they're doing here. I truly feel badly for them because I don't think
their commander in chief doesn't know what he's doing.
There's not a lot for them to do. There is not a lot for them to be doing, and it is polarizing. It's throwing ice water on the, you know, going to be in your nation's capital. And I have to say, I think it's dampening the amount of tourists that are coming to D.C. This is high tourist season, but you don't see as many people on the streets. So I don't know how good it is for this city. In fact, I think it's terrible in every way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, having machine guns on every corner in the tourist area, I don't know how. I mean, probably some people feel safer and some people are frightened. Know. Right.
I think people are my gut wasn't frightened or safer. It was extremely sad. I feel every time
that
I
our
see
country's
them, I
come
feel
to
like,
this.
This is sad that our country has come to this. Sad that our taxpayer dollars are going to this. Sad that these people who have said, I want to serve my country, are put in this position.
Well, and it's based on a lie,
and
right?
I do think it's a tinderbox. Absolutely.
I mean,
and sure, it's a tinderbox. Sure, it could up violence, as we've seen in the past. So, yeah, I'm really sad about it.
Yeah, it's really a shame that we've come to this, that we think that a show of force in our nation's capital with machine guns and National Guard are going to make us safer, when, in fact, Mayor Bauza and the city council, Councilman Pinto, I follow her on Facebook, they've been bragging about the wonderful successes, the new Commander Stadium, decline in crime. Washington, D.C. is a favorite place for you and I to both visit. We have friends and family there. It's just
beautiful, clean.
I think
safe.
You can play on the ignorance of the people in the outlying areas of America, the flyover area that have never been to D.C., or just see what they see on Fox News, where they're lied to. I mean, you know, that's another thing. Look, Connoisseur Media is good to us to give us this, but the megaphone that's 1,000 times bigger than us is this lying bag of crap called Fox News. They were sued for $1 billion and paid it because they were lying about the election. And they paid it because they were guilty. And then they go on to bigger and better things and bigger and better lies. And, you know, this all started with Ronald Reagan, with eliminating the Fairness Doctrine and allowing the accumulation of stations by large corporations. And if you look at Sinclair, which is owned by it's a religiously biased country. They're basically, as I can understand what their philosophy is a Christian nationalist agenda. And they own, you know, what is it, 25% of the TV stations. And there's no Fairness Doctrine. So Melissa and I can scream all we want.
You know, right now, you see what's happening. I mean, we are folding into authoritarianism. This is all part of the plan, I guess.
You know, I want to thank my son who just sent me a quote, which I think is, you know, we've had an assumption that we're all going to be cerebral, follow the data, follow the science, and try to help as many people as possible based on the information we have. That's sort of been the definition in colloquial terms of pursuit of happiness by our government. Now, we've agreed in many cases, Democrats and Republicans, that we need to do something. And in other cases, the Republicans call us the nanny state, and they don't want to go as far or as fast or tax as much. That's all a great debate. As I said many times, that's the debate between the 100-yard markers that we've always had. You know, I've had a great experience in my life with the likes of Rob Russo and John McKinney and Chris Shays, who I actually ran against and had a lot of disagreement about. But I had tremendous respect for them because they believed in the body politic. They believed in free speech and all the guardrails that were there to keep us there, right? What are we losing?
Yeah. It brings me to something that I wanted to discuss with Senator Duff. I don't know if he's on the line yet.
No, we're waiting for Senator Duff. I know he's busy, and he's probably speaking in front of a group or at a church or something. So we're going to hold the line open for him if he can make it.
Oh, that's wonderful, because I think he'll have, you know, thoughts that we'll want to hear on this. But I was at least a little bit heartened by the joint statement that came out from the Connecticut Democratic state chairman, Roberto Alves, and Republican state chairman Ben Proto after the Charlie Kirk shooting. It was the right thing to do in the moment. And both of them said, you know, they disagree on pretty much everything other than violence is not the answer. And the only way to stop the violence is by working together to bring down, everyone's temperature right now, and all of the rhetoric and all of the political
talk
of political violence. It made me feel better that we live in Connecticut.
We on the left have to sort of kowtow to not criticizing a man right after he's been cold-blooded murder.
100%.
You know, we definitely have to restrain. But for our nation to have the flags at half-mast for a man who we found to be reprehensible in his content, and we wish to debate him, we certainly never wish to see him killed. It's just a horrible outcome. It makes us all less. It makes us our democracy less. And we can just see by the trolls from Iran and China and Russia that are out there trying to foment dissent over this.
Absolutely.
Which is, points to the problem of our president being so deeply indebted to Putin and sort of towing the same line, trying to create division, which is the Russian agenda, you know?
Well, and I think, you know, you mentioned the flags at half staff. I mean, I think what so many people are pushing back against on that and so many other things is that there was absolutely no mention or notice taken or apology or anything from most of the people on the right when Melissa Hortman and her husband were murdered in Minnesota.
And they were murdered by a right-wing extremist who didn't want health care for all, who didn't want fair taxation as she saw it, who didn't want roads and bridges built as she saw it. She was there as a constructive engineer in an elected office with popularly elected person who we respect, just as we respect popularly elected Republicans having their own point of view. And, you know, it was the problem, if you want to think about it, is there was no video. And people would have been moved, I think, equally about her death and her husband's death and the dog's death in her hallway of her home if there was a video. So,
we've all been so inured. We've all been so, you know,
programmed.
programmed to expect violence and not to be as horrified by gun violence. And you're right. Charlie Kirk's shooting being caught live on, as it happened on Reels and watched by people over and over again it's sort of a new phase that we're in. And I fear that the next time something like that happens, because sadly, inevitably, something will happen like that with the amount of guns we have in this country and the amount of violent rhetoric we have. But it will almost not be as shocking because people have seen it, will have seen it before. What does that say? I mean, that's terrifying.
Well, it's terrifying. We're going to take a break for some commercials and come back. Hopefully we'll get Bob Duff on the air to talk about how he's keeping Connecticut such a great state and a safe state. We'll be right back after these messages.
Let's find out what's on Bill's mind today. It's Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up, where our great producer Tom Colangelo this week has got us right on time, right on the money. Thank you, Tom. You do a great job every time you're in the studio, as do our other producers, Adriana and Paul. I want to thank Connoisseur Media, and you're listening to us on 600 AM, 95.9 FM. Please tell your friends about us. Melissa and I would love to get to know them over the radio and share our point of view, and hopefully we'll have a lot of good things to talk about. Fiery speech and debate is what we're talking all about, and I know, Melissa, you have a lot of things to talk about with the firing of Jimmy Kimmel, sort of a nail in the coffin of free speech, don't you think?
It certainly feels that way. It's been a very sad week for democracy, but I know I want to talk about that. I want to talk about our free speech, but I also want to talk about something that I feel like, and maybe this is something that, you know, it's a new phenomenon I've been reading about. When you look at the man who murdered Charlie Kirk, we don't really know what his political philosophy is, if he even had one. No one can really say, did he fit into the left? He obviously grew up in a family that was Republican, perhaps MAGA, but as his ideology became more violent, where did he learn the language that was what, and how did he become so radicalized, as Congressman Himes was talking about, these young men who become radicalized in our society? Where did he get that information? And he certainly wasn't registered to vote with any party. He wasn't voting. We have these people, young people in our country, who are alienated from both parties, and I think becoming more and more It certainly seems violent in their own rhetoric about any of the political parties, and the far left, the far right, is really sort of alienating to a large group of people. And I think that that's sort of an interesting phenomenon that we need to sort of say, like, how do we win people back into the center? How do we make people feel more comfortable? We certainly don't do it by censoring our media. Sure, Jimmy Kimmel being taken off the air is insane, but then you follow that up by the Department of Defense and Pentagon saying that reporters are only allowed to report what is approved by them, having nothing to do with sensitive or classified information, but only allowed to report what is approved ahead of time by the Department of Defense, by the Pentagon. That's not American. That's terrifying.
Yeah, and I think if we could talk about those young men for a second. You know, Steve Hassan was our guest who wrote the book The Cult of Trump, and Trump has employed classic cult brainwashing techniques on a vast majority of his followers through rallies and social media. I think one of the things he talked about was don't confront head on. But I think I would like to ask the young men about the tests that the government has decided they were going to have. For example, they have said there's only two genders, which scientifically is not true.
Right.
One of 1,200 births. You have to have an expert come in to determine if they can, what genitalia they are. But then in addition to that, the government wants you to spread your legs. I guess Trump will determine what the sex is, or somebody like Bobby Kennedy. And then they're going to determine how you have to live your life based on what they have observed between your legs. That's the only other way I could see that happening. Right? They're going to tell you what you can read. You're going to tell you what is humor and what isn't. We're going to have a thought police. They're going to tell you, well, Jimmy Kimmel went over the line. We've never had a line. There is not a line when it comes to free speech. It is an absolute right, unless, of course, you do things that engender people's, like you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, as they say, right?
Right.
But there are all these tests.
That's right.
Let's ask the young men, do you want a test that the government can tell you, based on what they've observed between your legs and your genitalia, how you have to live your life? What books you can read? Should the government tell you that? Should the government tell you what's funny or not? Should they have these tests? I think that's really what we're getting down to. Should a woman be allowed to have her rights to seek a termination of her pregnancy based on how we thought she behaved? I mean, I hear people say, well, she was irresponsible. Well, that's not for you to determine. And by the way, if it was in a court of law, it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. You have no idea if she's responsible or not. She can even admit she was irresponsible. She can even admit she broke the law. But if the facts aren't there, you have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So it just seems to me that if we ask these young men, are these the type, for example, you're on Discord. Well, we're gonna go in and we're going to find out who's saying things on Discord, and we're going to come after you. If we ask them questions like, perhaps, Melissa, I don't know.
I know you're bringing up a lot of good things here. I think we're all over the place, but I think there's two things we're talking about. We're talking about what happens as a state becomes an as a free society becomes an authoritarian state. What rights are taken away? And we are literally watching this real time, and we're looking at a generation of people growing up as this is happening real time, as social media is amplifying the voices of the extremes.
Sure.
And we're seeing how radicalized young people, who, by the way, are experimenting with who they are, as that's part of growing up, right? How they're reacting to all of this coming down. And it's not necessarily what anyone thought it was going to be.
I wonder if you've had the same reaction as I do when we're on social media and we see from the left and the right these basic smart alecks, like Charlie Kirk was on college campuses, but there's leftists that do it too. And they basically want to intimidate their guests by showing the fallacy of their ideas. And I always thought that was so unfair. When I was 17, 18, 19, I was pretty well determined what I was going to believe, but I still had questions. I didn't need – the irony is that there are right-wing groups – we won't mention Charlie Kirk's name in this regard, although it's true, but I think there are many white ring groups that hold these professor watch lists somehow to restrict the professor's ability to teach their class. But then they sue the university when they can't get on campus. So it's free speech for them in order to destroy the free speech of others. And I think when we say that and people think, oh, yeah, maybe that's true, maybe there's a line, there is no line or a very distant line when it comes to free speech. And we need that in order to solve these problems that we're talking about, right?
100%. I don't know how we get out of this if we're not able to sort of hear differing perspectives.
And
even the ones we don't want to hear.
Yeah.
But really hear them and have debate.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to be set back many decades, and in a place where we don't really, we don't move forward as a society in a way that's good for anybody but a very, very small minority at the absolute top.
Yeah. I mentioned that my son Christopher is one of our loyal listeners, and he sent me this quote, which I think is really incredible. The creative class is often the genius behind our progress, whether it's in science or the arts or humanities. The creative class, they think out of the box, and they oftentimes come up with guidance for us to move forward in that pursuit of happiness. This is said by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
It's a really good point.
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
And think about what happened. Sorry to interrupt. I'm just thinking of what happened in the Soviet Union, where many, and really the Soviet bloc, there were two things that happened. One, people defected and brought their talent to the West.
Yeah.
You know, we may lose talent. And then on the other side, and this is my hope, is that there was, an intelligentsia and that put together a revolution. They called it the Velvet Revolution in some parts of Soviet bloc and some parts of Eastern Europe, where it was a revolution of thought, and it wasn't violent, but it allowed people to continue to have the in some very subtle and unusual way free thought, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
They
elected a poet as the president of Czechoslovakia,
right.
Vaclav Havel.
Exactly.
He was a poet. So let me just tell you what F. Scott Fitzgerald said.
Yeah,
okay?
Please.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. And that's sort of the critical thinking component that we're all born with that is silenced when you're brainwashed. It's silenced when you join a group that doesn't want you to express your concerns. And as I talked to my son, who has had some pretty bad experience with the effects of wokeism, I mean, the wokeism has gone too far in some ways, and we all know that. And that's because we evolve and then we correct. And I feel bad for what's happened to him and others. But his point was always, I agree with moving forward. I agree with evolving and giving more expansive rights to people. But when I have a question about some of the possible ramifications as we move forward, I'm silenced. And I think it's really good to pause and remember that the book banning that we do, and next week we'll have Victoria Woodard on here to talk about another banned book, is from the left and the right.
Can't wait for that.
And it's from the left and the right.
Now,
the predominance of them are from white Christian nationalists, but that's beside the point. It's just like we don't want to keep score with how many people were killed by whom. Killing is bad. Book banning is bad. Restricting freedom of speech is bad, no matter how you do it and who does it. The only reason I like to bring up the statistics is we need to know where to look. And you talk about these disenfranchised young men. I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Well, there's a lot of people disenfranchised, and there's a lot of people, you and I have talked about this, and maybe we'll get into this next week, who are not understanding that we live within a social contract and what that means and how that means. We'll get into it in detail, but how that means, we interweave who we are no matter what our beliefs are. And that's how we're able to live in civil society. Once that breaks down, it's pretty hard to keep a society civil. It's pretty hard to keep from, devolving into violence. And I feel like to a small degree, that's part of what I'm talking about, through the extremism that's amplified on social media and the voices that are coming through loud and clear to young people who are more and more, to some degree, disaffected.
Yeah. And a president who tries to divide us more, rather than bring us together in trying times,
absolutely,
is really the thing that these young kids are looking at and thinking it's okay behavior. I want to end the show on an optimistic note. We've had a great show here. Thanks to Congressman Hines.
Please do.
And a Republican from California, in the same debate that Ted Cruz really handed it to the president, called the tactics mafioso in shutting down Jimmy Kimmel. And a broken clock is right twice a day, right? And McClintock from California Republican said, a free society depends on tolerating all speech, confident that the best way to sort out good from evil is to put two sides side by side and trust the people to know the difference. That should be the motto of our show. That should be the motto of our show. Another show's in the books. Say goodbye, Lisa. Say goodbye to our listeners.
Say goodbye. Have a wonderful Sunday. Stay engaged. Stay strong. I'm Melissa Kane. I'm here with Bill Finch. We were so happy to have you with us. We will be back next week right here on WICC.